Welcome to Comics,
episode 204. This week, we talk about The Wicked and the Divine, The Faust Act. Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes. See what we're reading next. Send us a message. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast.
I mean, audio-wise, maybe, but I don't know about, you know, game-wise.
David, you were the one who recommended Initial D, weren't you?
Probably. I've watched the whole... I haven't watched the latest.
I started watching the first season, and I cannot stop.
It's like the racing is like this thing that is around the drama of the show.
Yeah, it's so amazing. It's like his dad raised him to be like a secret drift pro.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wait, is he the Tiger Woods of drifting?
Well, no.
No, he doesn't really like it.
He doesn't like doing it at first. And he doesn't even know he's being trained for it. You have to watch it, Andy.
Yeah,
like, I think I do.
The premise is... like, he doesn't know that he's the fastest drifter, but his dad, since he was, like, 12, has made him drive down a mountain at 2 in the morning in, like, a souped-up Toyota, and he has to, like, go as fast as he can without spilling a cup of water, and that's his training.
But his dad says the cup of water is there because he's delivering tofu. His dad owns a tofu shop, and he has to drive quickly and smoothly in order to get the tofu there quickly because it's fresh, but then also it can't be like bruised or it can't be bumped around in the car, so he has to be smooth. And so it's like kind of it has a character that he has like a best friend that's very much like Usopp.
Hmm.
But then like the show's kind of super serious because there's like this weird, there's like drama, like weird romance drama. It's funny. It's a very interesting show.
The best part about the show is that it takes itself 100% seriously.
Yeah, totally. How far into the show have you gotten, Jen?
Well, I was at Grant's house while I was watching it, so I only got through like 6 or 7 episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to, at the very least, continue watching the first season all the way through.
Okay. There's actually a live action version that's made by like a Taiwanese, I think it's a Taiwanese film studio. So it's in Chinese.
Oh my god.
It's, man.
I have to watch it.
Yeah, it's not a good movie, but it's like really hilarious.
No, that makes it all the better.
Yeah. But I have the first, like, 12 volumes or something of the manga.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have a bunch of the manga.
I'm going to borrow some of that from you.
Okay.
What are you able to watch it on?
It's on, like, it's been around. The show's not really new, so it's been around for a while.
Probably, like, Netflix or Hulu.
I believe Netflix has it.
Yeah. I've been watching it on Grant's Funimation account, but I think they have the first season free.
Okay, cool.
I think it might be on Crunchyroll, too. I mean, it's
like
not...
everything is on Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's been around for a while. Like, I remember watching it in, like, early 2000s. Oh, my God. So, Jen and Andy, so they don't have the Initial D show on Netflix anymore, but they do have the movie from Taiwan.
Oh, my God. Okay, I know what I'm doing after this.
Oh god, it's so funny.
Let's do this.
This week's comic.
Wicked and the Divine, The Faust Act by Kieran Gillen, art Jamie McKelvey and Matt Wilson. And I'm naming both the penciler and the colorist because I think the colorist, Matt Wilson, was baller in this. The coloring in this is great.
It was, especially, I mean, I don't know, do you know if they did the covers also? Because the covers were, man. Well, okay, maybe I'm making that up because I downloaded the...
Did you get it from the Humble Bundle like I did?
No, there was a Humble Bundle? I'm like...
Yeah, horrible. Image Comics Bundle 2. I think it might still be going on right now.
Oh, because I just bought it.
Awesome. It's done, unfortunately.
Oh. I got it from Comixology.
Oh, I should have told you about the bundle.
Yeah, Andy, why you keep stuff from me?
Well, David, you know, I tweeted it at twitter.com/welcometocomics. You'd think the host would be following that.
Well, you would think that, but I don't remember the last time I even looked at my Twitter feed, so there you go.
Yeah, that's true. You're probably following it, but whatever. But yeah, I don't know who did the covers, but the covers are great.
I have a list. I borrowed the actual trade from a friend. Ooh. And oh my god, I'm buying one for myself. This thing is high quality. So let's see. Jamie,
a ton of variants too, huh?
Yeah, Jamie McKelvey did most of the covers. Like the main ones.
Yeah.
And then they had like a bunch of guest artists as the variant covers, which are really good.
Okay. Yeah, so the covers I'm thinking of are the main,
like just the faces, right?
Yeah, the non-variant covers. And I thought those were excellent covers.
Yeah.
And they're really beautifully drawn.
And you know, I gotta tell you, like, I never picked this one up when I was on the stands, partially because, like, the cover is just people. And whenever I would, like, open the book to kind of flip through it, 80% of the pages in this are, like, just people talking. So I always thought it was... I had no idea what it was about. I never even bothered to look it up, because I know. There's been so much, like, talk about this comic, and I could easily just do a Wikipedia search, but, like, nah, it's just one of those frou-frou comics about people sitting around talking, like, talking.
Frou-frou heads. Comics, huh?
Frou-frou. Like, Underwater Welder, like, that she shit.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, like, there wasn't anybody punching. There was nothing exciting. That was my idea of it. But now that I've read it, and now that I know what it's about, like, before I would have told you that, like, a comic just about people and people interacting, the quality of the art doesn't matter so much. I would have told you that. But now that I know what it's about, like, this comic isn't just about these people. This comic is about how these people are glorified and turned into gods, because they are. And it's about the glorification of pop culture and modern media, and because of all that, the image of the person is central to the very core and idea of this comic. So, like, it makes so much perfect sense that the cover of each comic is just these people's faces. And it you also have to have incredibly good face work as an artist and coloring that's spot on. And it has to be about these people in a way that's not just like, oh, character, but like, ooh, look at this motherfucking baller badass. Just look, like, it's... There's nothing else like this in comics, I think. And because it's all about that glorification, it has to be this way. And Now that I know what it is, and I've seen what it is, I can't imagine it being any other way. That's probably the best way to phrase that after stumbling around. Yes, so there.
That was a very succinct... description of this comic.
But I gotta say, I think they're all just talking heads, but they look interesting and they look different, and it's like, I don't know.
You know, I think I probably, like, honestly, I don't even remember seeing this on the shelf, and it's probably for the reasons you mentioned, Andy. Like, I was like, oh, it's just a comic of somebody's face, which
yeah.
is... a horrible way to shop for anything.
Yeah.
Unless you're shopping for faces or something. Because, I mean, there's that old cliche, don't judge a book by its cover, right? Yeah. And that's exactly what we're doing. But
there's a lot of comics on the shelf, and my eyes gravitate to the ones with the most cleavage.
Or, like, punches and stuff.
Yeah. Or Star Wars. Like, there's a lightsaber on the cover. My eye would just naturally... Not saying that that makes me buy it, but my eye goes that direction.
And the thing is, like I said, this is, you know, the covers are really beautifully drawn, and that should be... That should be something that draws a person in, and I'm sure that it does work for some people, but, you know, I'm the kind of person that it apparently doesn't work on. But now that we're reading the comic, and I've taken the time to, like, look at the covers, I feel, you know, I feel differently, and I feel like, oh, I should have paid more attention to this comic. But, you know, you mentioned, like, frou-frou comics earlier. and one thing, like, that really annoys me when I go into a comic book shop is that sometimes you will, you know, you'll run into somebody and they'll be buying the comics and they don't buy anything from Marvel or DC, right?
Yeah.
They only buy stuff from, smaller companies. Mm-hmm. So they are the people buying... They're the people that turn these kind of comics into frou-frou comics, right?
Yeah.
Because they're too good for the big two. Yeah, you know?
They're too good for Cape Comics.
And that's really unfortunate that, you know, I don't actively try to be the opposite of that, but I think in some ways I am because I end up mostly reading Cape Comics. I mean, I love stuff like East of West and Pretty Deadly and that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I gravitate towards the Cape comics. And when I, you know, choose to spend my limited pool of money, it's on that. And that's not because I don't think these comics are, worth my money, because clearly they're really good comics. And I did buy this, you know, I bought the digital collection for volume one. But maybe because I want to buy, like, I'm going for the safe bet or something to that effect, which is, you know, people go to the familiar. Like, you don't even realize you're doing it a lot of the time, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why sometimes I'll find myself buying a comic with one of my favorite superheroes on it. And I know that the comic is not that good, but I continue to buy it. Like,
yep.
After Geoff Johns left Green Lantern, I continued to buy it. And I knew, I was like, I just am not enjoying this comic like I did before. And I should stop buying it, but I kept buying it and kept buying it. And what happened is I would come home with the comic and then it would just sit. Like, I wouldn't read it. But it's like, okay, well, there's $4 that are just going to sit in a plastic bag for till the end of time, right?
Yup. I know that exact feeling because I did that when Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Conner left Power Girl. I was like, there's no way it can be as good. And it's not that it was terrible after that. It was okay. But it's like,
it's just that, like, you know, you don't, whatever made you enjoy the comic so much before is not there anymore. That doesn't mean it's a bad comic necessarily. It just means it's not your comic anymore. You know, you don't enjoy it the same way you do or you did. And so
as a reader, you kind of get like stuck in that rut.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And so that's probably part of the reason why I, you know, didn't buy this comic for whatever reason. And what I really feel like I should do is shop for comics based on the based on the author.
Oh yeah.
Because I first started reading Jonathan Hickman with Fantastic Four, yes.
Yeah.
And so when he took over Avengers, I mean, I was still getting Avengers, but I was now excited to get it. Not that I wasn't excited before, because I liked Bendis, but I was excited because this guy that I really liked who had done Fantastic Four, and S.H.I.E.L.D., he did S.H.I.E.L.D. also. And,
we read that too, didn't we?
Secret Warriors. We did Secret Warriors also, didn't we?
Huh. No.
It was the one with Nick Fury and... Anyways.
No, yeah, we did.
Yeah, so... and then because of Jonathan Hickman, I decided to pick up, you know... I can't even talk today. I decided to pick up East of West and then God is Dead, which is another comic that Jonathan Hickman started, although he's not on the book anymore. And so if I actually did that with all my reading, I would have picked up this because I really enjoyed Kieran Gillen's run on Journey into Mystery. I don't know if you guys read that, but it was really good.
Well, that was the one with Sif, right?
No, it was one with Loki.
Young Loki.
Oh, that's right.
Young Loki. It was very good.
He became Kid Loki. The one he, when it turned into a book about Sif, it was a different writer.
Okay.
And so, like, you know, I should give more... I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I should, like, write... Or I should choose who I read based on some... the things that I enjoy. And maybe that is the writer. Maybe it's the character. Who knows? But whatever it is, I shouldn't write something off just because of its cover. I should actually spend the time looking at a comic.
Yeah, but no, that's tough though. Cause then like I've thought about this too. Cause then you're buying episode one of Wicked and Divine and maybe you don't know. So then you buy issue two. And then maybe, then you're about issue three. And they're like, well, I've got three out of the probably first five in the story. I might as well just finish off the first story. But, like, at that point, you've put in considerable resources, one way or another, into reading, purchasing, adding it to your pull list. Like, you've committed to it to a certain amount already.
Right.
And so, like, right. It's really hard to dip your feet into a new comic like this. Which, I mean... Having bought the Humble Bundle, I'm glad that they did it because, like, I bought that Humble Bundle mostly for the Walking Dead compendium because I really wanted to read more Walking Dead, and this happened to be in it too. Also, Sex Criminals was in it. And it's like, okay, fine. This is all stuff that I've heard things about, but didn't want to make that commitment for. And I think... That's something I like. If Image is going to keep doing this with Humble Bundle, then that's great. And MDCU kind of does it for Marvel. Like, if there's a run that's been going for a while, like at this point, if you haven't picked up Captain Marvel yet by Kelly Sue DeConnick and you were interested, you could read the first couple issues on MDCU. The only one you can't really do it with is DC.
Well, DC, you can get some of their books. Well,
on Comixology, at least but they're like full price digital too. I don't know, but it's tough because even then, like you have to make a certain commitment to it. And this is if you buy this comic, it means that you didn't buy another one. And there's like the best analogy I can come up with is my parents. Whenever they come into town, we live in the 10th largest city in the country. There are countless places to eat here and all kinds of cultural diversity. And whenever my parents come to visit, you want to know where they want to go eat? Red Lobster. You know why? Because it's not exciting. It's probably not even the best meal out there for them. But they know, to a certain extent, what they're going to get. So if you're going to go into the comic book shop, David, and you're like, I can buy three comics this week, you're going to grab a Thor. Whether or not it's a good Thor run, because you're a Thor fan, and at a certain point, you know you're going to enjoy reading the comic just because you like the character. And the comic might be so-so, but there's a certain level of comfort and stability within that purchase. And to get the casual comic book buyer to go out on a limb and pick up something like The Wicked and the Divine, ooh, there's a barrier there, and it's tough. And even not a casual reader, people like us, like it's kind of tough. And I don't know how they get past that, but like I need to get past it, obviously, because I loved this fucking comic.
No, I thought this comic was great, and I feel bad like that. I'm when these amazing comics come out, I feel bad or that I've like missed out on something like Chew.
Yeah.
I feel like I didn't get in on that when it was new, so I missed out. So like I missed out on whatever, like being part of that conversation. And that's really stupid, right?
But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's tough. And there's not, I don't know if there's a good, like, I don't know if there's a good fix. It is, it's just, it's tough. So let's actually talk about the comic.
All right.
I gotta tell you, as much as I'm talking about how I love this comic, I was kind of here nor there when it was about, what's the character's name? The teenage kid, the girl.
Laura. The main character?
Yeah, Laura.
Yes, Laura.
Okay, she might be the main character, but she wasn't in my head for this trade. Because the whole time I was like, I know she's the main character, but I don't really care about Laura.
If she wasn't the main character, she was at least the point of view character.
Yeah, she's the protagonist, we'll say.
Because in a comic about gods, we certainly didn't get a omnipresent narrator.
No, which is great. I was like, give or take, I was like, oh, trial with Lucifer, great. And I didn't really care that much until Lucy broke out of jail. And I was like, of course, yeah, be baller. And she was like,
that
yeah,
was like
I
the,
killed
that
fucking
judge.
That
was like the last issue.
Huh?
That was like the last issue.
I know, but... Okay.
Are you saying you like slogged through it until you got to this
one
part?
No, not slogged through. I was just iffy, right? But then when Lucy broke out and she was like, fuck this. Fuck sitting in this fucking place. Of course I killed that motherfucker. I'm Lucifer. Once that happened, I was like, oh, thank you. This is great. Because then it's the whole, like, because not only is that perfect for her character to say, fuck this, fuck you, burn the world. Like, that's great for her character. But also, like, the allegory, my God, because she was trying to do the right thing, right? If it was her the whole time, she tried to do the right thing. She tried to go to the jail. She tried to be the angel. She did. She tried to be good, and she just couldn't hold it together, and she fell. And it's like, yes, that's beautiful. It's like four issues of her trying to hold her shit together, and then finally just saying, fuck it, and being the devil that you knew she was gonna be. It was just, it was payoff. I loved it. Also, she looks awesome with the white suit and everything. And like
her character design. Yeah. So good.
I love the person. I forget who it was, but referred to her as like a David Bowie, like stuck in the David Bowie type of thing.
Oh, Cassandra. Yeah.
Cassandra did that.
I thought that was like so spot on.
Yeah, I loved Lucy. She totally carried this for me. Even though I was on the fence with her, I loved her. She was wonderful. And I'm excited to see what Laura does now as a god.
Well, yeah. Assuming, do you think she's a god, or do you think she was just given powers like Lucy said she would do from the start?
Well,
I think she's taking Lucy's place. I mean, the comic is called The Faust Act.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what all of these kids have done. They've all sold their souls to Ananka to be these just pop culture idols. They've done it. They've taken that deal.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, we spent a lot of this comic in Laura's head, where she's basically talking about how she wants to be these people. Yeah. You know, she worships them.
Yeah.
Quite literally. And it seems like she would give anything to be them. And that seems like at the end of the five issues, that's the point where we've gotten at. She's gotten what she wanted, and now the be careful what you wish for is gonna yeah. is gonna go down.
Yeah, because on the one hand, I was like, I can see the allure of this culture and everything, like the glorification here, but I also was like, this is just a stupid teenage girl who doesn't realize how good of a life she has. Like, all of those, you know, just angsty fucking teenagers out there. You know, I was like, she's just stupid. But, like, that's the point of this, is there's legions of angsty, stupid teenagers willing to just completely idolize and make gods out of pop icons. And that's what they're doing. And it's like, let's just take that to this extreme. And yeah, sure, Laura might not be the most likable character. You might want to just say, shut up and go the fuck home half the time. But she's presented with such an apathetic view of her own life that you also kind of, like, you stop caring about her home family, too, and you just want to see her burn shit like Lucy.
Well, I mean, she's very teenager.
Yes.
Like, every interaction with her parents is almost stereotypical. Like, you know, she gets arrested, and then she's like, you know, this is a row. Or is it a row? I don't know. She's like, I'm fighting with my parents. I want them to care, and they don't care. And then later, you know, her parents storm in when she's being interviewed in the blood-spattered clothing, and she's like, I didn't understand why, but now I do. She's too... My main gripe with this comic, and I did like it a lot, it's right up my alley, was that everyone's a teenager. And they act like teenagers. But
they are literally all teenagers.
I know, but that... I'd prefer that they weren't.
Was Cassandra a teenager, too?
No, she's not, but she's, like...
Oh, no, because she's got, like, advanced degrees and shit.
She has, like, the, I'm a PhD, so I'm gonna be an asshole trope going on.
Except she... it's the worst.
So she's, like, she's the only one who's right.
It's the worst, because she did that, like, she had her rant, like, you're just a bunch of fucking idiots, and I have a goddamn degree in mythology. I had that moment, and I was facepalm, and I was like, oh, Christ, I resonate with this character.
Well, the best part...
I was sitting there reading, like, this is going to be a bunch of bullshit, and I had been thinking, like, I hope none of this mythology that I actually know comes into play here, because then I'll be pissed. And then, like, two pages later, she said, I was like, oh, goddamn it.
It actually kind of... drove me nuts later when they're like, who's Ananke? And Laura looks it up on Wikipedia. Which, by the way, that was like the best depiction of a Google search that was ever done.
That was great.
But then she looks it up and Cassandra's like, how did you know that? I didn't know that. And Laura goes, it was on Wikipedia. So it's like a throwaway line, just kind of invalidating like years of research. Seems a little sad.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I wrote papers on that I could not tell you about now.
Yeah, I think everybody is guilty of that.
Of course.
I
mean,
I was trying to tell my nephew some stories because there were no toys around when we were on vacation and he was getting bored. So I started telling him some Arthurian stories and I completely forgot Tristan and Isolde halfway through telling it. And I was like,
hey, you know,
I wrote three papers on that story. Fuck.
Hey, in your defense, that story was boring as hell. I hated that story
I don't remember it. I don't remember if it was boring or not. So I just told him the story of Gawain instead. Gawain and the Green Knight.
I like that story a lot, but I remember getting into an argument with Professor Cox about the red scarf.
That was a good day for everybody.
The red scarf.
Anyway.
Anyways, I'm sorry if you're listening, Dr. Cox.
That'd be hilarious if she listened to this. So, what about you guys? What were your favorite gods in this, other than Lucifer?
I really liked the Morgan.
Yeah.
Morgaine? I don't know how you would say that.
The, like, underworld goddess figure?
Yeah, and I really liked Baal.
Yeah! I love Baal.
That's actually, I looked it up on Wikipedia, it's Baal. But it can be pronounced Baal. Baal, like with an apostrophe.
He's fucking Baaler.
Yes.
I was like, okay, yeah, of course, they're all cocky. And for, like, a half a second, I was like, of course you make the cocky guy in the suit black. Like, of course. Like, that cocky athlete stereotype, because he's, like, buff and tall and everything. I was like, of course you go right there. But then he walks by that fucking, like, fresco of himself. And I was like, never mind, I'm all in. This is awesome. That's great. The fresco is so awesome. I, like, want a print of that to put up on the wall.
You know, as we're talking about this, I realized that Kieran Gillen is really good at writing teenagers.
Yes.
Because, I mean, he wrote this, which is really good, and about teenagers. He did Young Avengers, which was about teenagers and really good. And then Journey into Mystery, which was about, like, teenage Loki, which was also really good.
Ooh,
I wonder if he's secretly a teenager.
He should do a reboot of The Runaways.
Yeah, I could see that.
I miss The Runaways. I want to read more of that, too. So many good comics, guys. God damn it. I gotta just stop doing everything else. And just
you know, after we did that for the episode for the show, after we did the episode for the show, I actually went and finished that series.
Yeah?
Yeah, I finished the whole thing. I thought it was really good.
Nice.
So that was a little tangent. But anyways, yes. Jen, who is your favorite god or goddess?
You know, I can't really say I had a favorite. I liked Lucy. See, this is hard. Like, I went into this comic being like, this was so great. And now that I'm reflecting upon it, it's hard to, like, point out why I thought it was good, I guess.
No, Jen, your favorite is Baphomet.
You know, Baphomet is a serious intellectual capable of cultural illusions.
It was his jacket and, like, medallion thing. Right, the goat head medallion.
Yeah.
He's the counterculture god. He's the one who's just like, he's popular because he makes fun of everybody else. That's the only reason he's popular. It's like the pop star who's anti-pop star, but still by being anti-pop star makes himself a pop star. Kind of like how Lorde has a song about how she'll never be rich, and now she's a millionaire.
You know, Andy, I thought your favorite might have been Odin or Woden.
Maybe when we get more, I like.
But
him.
Do you want to know why I think he's your favorite?
Is it because he has a harem?
No, it's because of his Tron costume.
Yeah, the Tron one too. I like that take on Odin because every other take on Woden is like the old like gold eye patch Odin Woden and.
Anthony Hopkins.
Like, yeah, yeah. Who is awesome. I love that portrayal of Odin. He's fantastic as Odin. But yep, this is sure. Like this is Woden the creator kind of a thing. And like also
well,
he's
the delegator.
Yeah. And I really want to see more of it. I think issue 7 is the one with him on the cover, and I'm gonna go buy that shit. Just to have that cover. I'm gonna subscribe to this digitally through Image. But I'm going to go buy that one because it looks pretty good. And I like him, but I didn't get enough of him. Like, you get, like, 2 pages here and there.
Well, I didn't even realize when they're going into Valhalla that the guards that stopped Cassandra from entering are his Valkyries.
Yeah.
I thought they were just, like, crazy disco chicks or whatever.
Nope.
But
more
turns
of
out
hair.
They're actually Odin because, you know, Tron.
Yeah.
He's like Daft Punk from Tron. He's one of the Daft Punk guys.
Ooh, yeah.
Right? The one with that kind of... The one, I don't know which one is which.
I don't need to watch Tron.
Is he Daft or Punk? That's how it is, right? One of them is Daft and one of them is Punk?
Yes, that's exactly how it works.
I'm with it, guys.
So Cassandra wasn't a god, though, right? Cassandra was just a person. Somebody...
No, she's Cassandra...
She was a
something cub reporter.
Journalist.
Yeah. Well, because somebody said something like, I knew who you were, or I knew...
See, I got the notion... Okay, so from that, because Lucy says, I knew you were trans, right?
Yeah.
The way I read that was that they had some kind of relationship, maybe, really? Previously. Really? I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into it too much, but because Cassandra seems to have, like, a chip on her shoulder as far as these characters go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And maybe it's because she was... Maybe that's too simplistic that she's like that because she was, like, spurned romantically. But for some reason, that's the direction my mind went with it.
Well, and Cassandra was already in the room when Laura gets... led in after Amaterasu's concert. Right?
Right.
Cassandra was already doing the interview, so Cassandra already has an in. She already knows all of these people, and they already kind of all know her, I think. So there's something with her and them that's not all revealed yet.
Yeah, it's not obvious what their connection is. Because it's more than she's just, like, the, you know, just the reporter. Because it could be any old reporter, right?
Yeah.
But it's kind of like how Lois Lane has the in with Superman.
Yeah.
But Lois doesn't really know why. We don't know why Cassandra has an in with these characters, with the Pantheon.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know everything, obviously, because she didn't know about Ananke, or however you pronounce that.
Yes. I was doing an Ananka. Either way.
Well, I think the reason why I did Ananke is because she's a Greek goddess, and I remember, like, whenever we read mythology, we pronounced the E like an E.
Oh, yeah.
Like Arachne, right? I don't
know. Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, it's Ananke. Okay. Just looked it up. David wins.
Yeah.
She did a good job of being creepy as hell.
Yes.
Especially in the beginning.
That mask.
Like, in the very beginning where it's in the 20s and she, like, says, she just leaves and then the house blows up. You're like, what's going on here?
Well, they killed each other, right? Like, I only got that at the very end when they started, like, when she snapped her fingers at Lucy and blew up her head. And then I paged back and I was like, oh, she made them murder each other.
Oh, see, like, I understood it as she just killed them all.
Well, no, if you...
They were all pointing at each other in the beginning.
Yeah, they snapped their fingers at each other after counting to four. Which, I wish they had any explanation in these issues for what that countdown, or count up, I guess, is. Why? Like, why count to four?
I don't know.
Good question.
It's so symbolic, but it doesn't represent anything.
But Ananke doesn't count when she gets Lucy, does she? I forget.
No, I think it's only the gods.
She's Ananke's something else. There's...
Well, no, so in Greek mythology, she is a goddess, but she's a goddess that even the gods pay homage to, because she's the, like, master of fate.
Yeah, she's like a higher level god. Kind of.
But she's not like an Olympian god, though, I don't think. But she's like the mother of the fates or something, too, in Greek mythology. I don't know. I forget.
Yeah, she's... Because it leads to a whole bunch of other questions, like how long has she been around? Does she decide who becomes these gods? Does she decide which ones reincarnate? Because they come back different, right? Like, it's not always Lucifer and the Morrigan and Baphomet. Like, I think that they change, right?
Yeah, I got that notion.
Yeah. So maybe she decides which gods come back. Like, I don't know. That's one of the things that I really appreciate about this comic, is it's all about the glorification and the persona, like, the idolatry of these people and, like, the pop culture. And, like, all of that is there, but... There's a certain amount of world building that's happening here that is also really, really interesting. And it's like, you really want to kind of get answers to some of these questions. And you know there's a little bit of a time limit on how long it's going to be before something comes up, too. Because they're only supposed to be alive for 2 years, right? As gods? Right. And they already have been long enough to become this popular. So...
But I don't think... I think they have... Because at one point they say... Lucy has less than 2 years left, but that could really be anything, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It's fun. Because either by then, something's going to have to happen to Ananke, or something's going to happen to all of them, or shit's going to have to go down.
You know, I've been thinking about why, maybe like why Lucy got seems to have Lucifer's powers. Not Lucy. Laura. I keep getting confused because they both have L names. Why Laura has Lucifer's powers at the end. I think it has something to do with the fact that... you remember Ananke says something to when Laura's in Valhalla. Something along the lines of, if the gods don't come back, humans won't be inspired.
Uh-huh.
So maybe if the 12 aren't around, there's some kind of loss of inspiration. Like, it there needs to be a balance. I mean, obviously we haven't met all 12 gods yet, right? Because that little symbol, like that...
The circle of symbols, right?
Yeah. But maybe there has to be somebody. There has to be somebody there during that, like during the 2 years. But I mean, maybe that's not true either, because at the end we get, what is it? There, or at the beginning, there's in the 20s, there's three or four gods around the table, right?
But that might be the only three or four that are left. Maybe they kill each other. Maybe they die doing something else. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. There's just more questions. The more you dig into, like, the mythology that's happening here, the more questions you get about how it all works and what's going on. And
well, that's a good thing. I mean,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, I was wondering, too, like, are they all musicians? Do they all have to be musicians? Like, what were, like, you had to go into the subway to see the Morgan, right? Because the Morgan was, like, so underground that she's literally underground. But then, like, they never started singing. Baphomet never sang. So was it going to be a poetry slam down there?
I don't know if they're singing or just getting on stage and speaking in tongues. Because I think at the start it specifies that. And
well, I think Lucy says, or not, God, I keep doing that. Laura says something to the effect, like, she doesn't know what they're saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think it's during Amaterasu's concert.
Yeah, Amaterasu. Nobody knows what Amaterasu's saying. She just sings, and it's so beautiful that you can't help yourself.
Right.
Yeah. Which, like, that was a kind of neat pull, and it's like, it's the immediate explanation of why there's this infatuation with all of them. It's like, it's just the, not just that she's awesome, but that she is this awesome. There's awesome that you know, and then there's this whole other fucking level of awesome. It's a good quick pull in and explanation of what's going on there. But then you get to the underground, there's like Morgan and Baphomet, and I was sitting there half the time like thinking, what, were they going to have a fucking poetry slam? Because I don't feel very inspired by that.
But it's, I think, you know, because Laura is into Amaterasu, right? And, and Lucifer.
Yeah.
And they seem to be, at least on the surface, they're more clean-cut gods, right?
Yeah, and flashier, too.
But then there's Baphomet and the Morgan are these underground, like, punk metal type, you know, that's the image they present. So maybe they inspire a different subset of culture.
Yeah.
And so the reason they appear the way they do is because they have to, you know, they have to try to capture as many people as possible to, for whatever end. I mean, say, like, capture sounds like negative, but entrance or to inspire, right? I mean,
yeah.
It seems to me that that's like the whole point of this, is that humanity needs them. I mean, Anunnaki even says that humans need the gods more than the gods need the humans, because the gods just want adoration.
Yeah, that was a really cool line.
But the humans are looking for something else out of gods, or out of the gods. And I mean, that's even true, at least from my perspective, what religion means. It means a lot of, it means different things to different people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people get different things out of it. But it doesn't, it's equally important to those people as with others, because on some spiritual level, they are getting something out of it that they need to live their life in the way they want to live their life, right? I mean, some people follow religion for a set of moral guidelines. Others need it use it for comfort in times of distress. And so there are these subcultures in London. I mean, well, there's a separation, right? I mean, Laura's part of one group, and then the people who go into the underground to see the Morgan are part of another group. But they both need to go see their gods for some reason, you know? And it's interesting because the people, it doesn't seem like there's a clear, people are not necessarily you know, it's not, at least people don't know for sure that these gods are actually gods. They're just these rich people to them.
Yeah.
I mean, Cassandra seems to, she doesn't believe it, but she seems to play along, or at least.
It's like, all right, this is your stage performance. This is your stage persona. It's kind of like Stephen Colbert,
yeah.
Right? When he does his persona, like mocking Bill, what's his name, Bill O'Reilly.
Well, he's just like a right wing.
Yeah,
pundit,
yeah.
Right?
But he'll do interviews in that same personality. Like he's in that character more than just on that show.
Yeah, even
know?
Like
it's kind of that sort of thing, I think.
Or well, at least that's
just like, all right, fine, you're Amaterasu. Let's just pretend you're Amaterasu and we'll finish this damn interview.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I find this whole thing to be very fascinating.
Yeah, and you know, I was a little bit like, yeah, okay, this is an extremity of the glorification of idolatry of pop, this and blah, blah, blah. All that kind of frou-frou stuff that you could talk about. Then. But then I started thinking, like, okay, but really? I mean, I think about, like, things that we're into. Like, I just introduced my wife to Avatar, and we're halfway through season 3 of Avatar The Last Airbender, and it took us, like, a week and a half. And we're burning through that shit. And, like, in David, you and I, like, how much our lives have been changed and inspired and crafted by fucking Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, even going to the well of music, like, I know people who are so into Daft Punk, like, they make posters for Daft Punk. I know a guy who designed his own font based on Daft Punk. Based on one of Daft Punk's songs. And it's like, these people do inspire other people. And they get something out of it, sure. Like, Daft Punk gets money, and that's great, and I'm sure that they get some musical significance, but even in the real world, those artists can't possibly get as much back from their fans as they are giving and putting out in the world. And this comic, I think, is taking that and just amplifying it a little bit. But the concept is the same. And so then when you start from that basis of reality and you amplify it just a little bit, it's not much more of a stretch to go the other direction and look at, like, deities and pantheons and tune it down a little bit and kind of find that middle road between the idolatry of things that actually exist. The idolatry of things that we... How do I phrase this without being offensive to the really religious people? Like... without implying
you can say, like,
that
we look...
That,
I mean, yeah. People look up to these.
Yeah, like, there is a tangible middle ground between idolatry and worship, I think. And, well, idolatry is a form of worship. I cannot possibly phrase this right without offending somebody. Between fake mythology or mythology that people believe and the physical world that you can touch and feel and know, there is a middle ground between those two that you can easily conceptualize, and this comic hits it awesomely.
I think maybe you could say maybe it's like spirituality and reality.
There you go. Thank you. This is why we have three hosts, because one of us will get it right.
Because I don't think saying spirituality is offensive.
No, you're right. Definitely not. Is there a god that you guys want to see in this?
No, I like the way that it's going. I mean, I love Thor, but I get enough Thor from Marvel, so...
Or is there a pantheon that's not represented? Do we get a Greek god? I don't think so.
Anunnaki!
Anunnaki, yeah.
Okay. Anunnaki, yeah. But I mean, we get Minerva, who Roman overlapped a lot.
Where was Minerva?
She was the young one.
Oh, yeah, the little kid with the owl.
Oh, the owl, yeah.
Well, Minerva is the Roman name for Athena, right?
Yes.
That's right. hence the owl.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of want to see a Hindu god or... I don't know. I think...
We get a Shinto god with Amaterasu.
Yeah. Hindu gods are kind of interesting.
Hmm.
I don't know. It is pretty, like, spread out on there. I wonder how you would possibly... Because all of these are from pantheons. What would you do if you put, like, the Christian god in there?
Well, you got Lucifer. That's from Abrahamic lore.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of Lucifer, I want to... Well, actually, I'm going to save this for later, because we always talk about, like, our favorite panel, so I'm going to save it.
Well, let's do that right now, then. What was your favorite panel? Tell me.
All right, so my favorite panel is the part where we get Lucy's origin story. You know how she's, like, falling through the fire?
Yeah.
And Anki's describing, like, what she's going to be. And then we get her in the backyard.
Yeah.
And she's, like, in the scorched earth. But my favorite part of that is the feathers.
Yes.
The feathers. I was like, oh, man. That is awesome. Because they could have easily gone, like, you
know, fire.
Horns and, you know, somehow work horns and, like, goat hooves into it. But that's not really, like, the Paradise Lost Jonathan Milton. Jonathan Milton? Is that right? That doesn't sound right to me. Milton. Who wrote Milton, right?
Paradise Milton Lost. Wrote Paradise Lost, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is his first name Jonathan?
I don't know.
Anyways, but, like, that's... You know, that's the image that everybody has of, a lot of people have of Lucifer, because that is Lucifer's origin story. You know, he's a fallen angel. And so I just loved that panel. I was like, I don't know. I thought it was great. So that was my favorite panel.
Yeah, that one was really good. Mine easily is that Baaler is shit fresco. I fucking love that thing so much. And there was, in the digital trade paperback that I got, there was a thing in the back how they were explaining that they called in, they had Jamie McKelvey pencil it, so it would be within the similar art style, but they called in a totally different colorist to do the coloring for it, and that's why it fits in the world, and it doesn't look out of place, but it's, like, so obviously, like, the, oh, of Baaler.
Well, what's greatest, too, is it's, like, it's an artist within, it's art within art, right?
Yeah.
So they don't.
Artception.
Yeah, but so it's better that it's not Jamie McKelvey doing Jamie McKelvey, right?
Yeah.
It's more interesting if we get Jamie McKelvey, somebody else doing. I mean, it is and it isn't, right?
Yeah.
It's not the same.
It's somebody else doing Jamie McKelvey instead of Matt Wilson. Yeah, Matt Wilson, the colorist. Yeah, I love that. Jen?
Hmm? Sorry, I am so out of it tonight, and, okay, my favorite panel is, what?
No, I'm just laughing. there's no underlying
okay.
to my laughter, it's just, I enjoyed your reaction.
I just, I had, like, completely zoned out at some point, so I was like, am I responding to the right question? It was awful. I am tired. Okay. My favorite panel is definitely the scene where Laura comes back with Morrigan and the Ravens to get Lucy and rescue her. And, like, in the middle, they just focus on this close-up of their two hands clasping.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
And all the wings in the background. I thought it was just beautifully drawn, but also, you know, you kind of get this sense that Lucy has tried to push Laura away and be like, you know, you're just, she basically just calls her a sycophant, right? It's
yeah.
Like, you just want it for the fame, and I don't know, it shows actual admiration that she went through all this trouble and put herself in so much danger to help someone that she barely knows. And I thought it was one of the stronger, like, just character development points of the series, or of the trade.
Legit.
Yep.
Yep. All right, let's rate this one. Ooh, who wants to go first?
You do.
Fuck, I don't know. I'm gonna go with I'm gonna go with 4.5. I really, really like this comic by the
end. That's a strong rating.
Yeah, it is. Not just because the art fits perfectly in a way that I didn't expect it to, and I also came into this book kind of biased against it. When I started reading this, I was like, okay, I need to finish this so that I can go back to reading my other comic. That's how I came into this. But by the end, I was completely flipped around. And it was like, it was because even through so much of this, it was interesting and it's great. And all of this mythology that they're building around these reincarnation and all of this, like, that was all great. But I'll say what I said in the beginning. What really pulled me in was that Lucy's story was like Lucifer's in this comic. And that made me want to go and, like Laura did, hop on Wikipedia and look up the Morgan and look up Baphomet and look up Baal and look up Amaterasu. And see what their stories were so that as I'm reading this, I can look for it. And not a lot of comics make me want to do that. Make me actually go and look on Wikipedia about the characters in there. Like, it's fine when you create source material on your own, when you just create a whole new world. Like, East of West creates a whole new world, and it's great, and I love it. But I think on the opposite end, there's something to be said for drawing inspiration from reality or drawing inspiration from existing other works. And if you want to hear us talk more about that, go listen to Boxers and Saints, because that's kind of like the pinnacle of that, of a story based on historical events. But like, this is just, we're going to take these pieces of mythology from all around the world and build them into this whole new reality, but still make it fit, make it work, and have it be allegory for their original stories. Like, this is a reincarnation. These people, they're going to get this life again, sure, but they are who they are, and they're going to live their life the way that they did the first time, and they're going to make all the same mistakes, because that's who they are. And that's good. I like that. That's nice. Plus, his art. I mean, we talked about the art up front. I know, we don't know if we gave it enough to. It's just, it's so pretty, and the coloring is so good, and you don't talk about colors a lot, but it's so good. This is such good coloring.
Well, you know, there's some parts of in the art that we don't get a lot in the comic, because we talk about the faces and stuff and the covers, but the scenes where it is like action, like bolts of energy and stuff, they looked great, especially the part where Baal and Lucifer are fighting.
Oh, yeah.
And Lucifer, like, traps him in the fire, and he starts coming out, and he's all, like, lightning and stuff. That was awesome.
Yeah.
It looked really good.
And it's so clean and crisp and just badass, and yeah, mm-hmm. It's good. It's really good art. So yeah, straight up 4.5. Like, I came into this not looking forward to it, and now it's on my pull list, like, straight up, and I'm gonna go buy a copy just to own a physical copy, and I'm getting the digital sub, and it's just, I'm all in after being skeptical.
I want to go buy the trade, like the physical trade.
So yeah, 4.5. David?
Well, before I rate it, I want to ask you a question, Andy. Have you read Neil Gaiman's American Gods?
No. I have a confession to make. I have read almost nothing of Neil Gaiman.
Okay, so I'm not going to, like, pimp Neil Gaiman right now, but I'm going to pimp that book. I think, based on what you just said about this comic, I think you will really like American Gods.
All right.
So next time
I've heard so many good things.
I'm gonna bring you a copy on Saturday. Okay.
Okay. I think the only thing I've ever read is Neverwhere.
Yeah, Neverwhere is really good, and it's one of his more well known titles. But American Gods is really good. Have you read it? You must have read American Gods, right, Jen?
Of course.
Right? Did you based on what Andy just how he rated that? Don't you think he'll like American Gods?
Yes, I do think so. Also, Anansi Boys.
Oh yeah, I have that on my shelf, but I haven't read that yet.
It's good. Well, it's equally good. Well, it's almost like, as good.
It's kind of like a sequel, right? Kind
of. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I guess anyways, when Neil Gaiman dies, he's giving me what I'm going to buy the complete works of. That's
he's
a
got
terrible
some,
thing to say. Never mind.
He's got some really good short stories too. He has he has a short story called A Study in Emerald, I think.
Yeah.
Which is about Sherlock Holmes, but it's
also
amazing. Like, you don't even see the twist coming, and then it comes, and you're like, what the fuck did I just read?
To say anything about it would be to give it away, but
yeah, that's why I was going to say it's like a
Sherlock Holmes amazing short story.
Awesome.
So anyways, I guess I'll go back to the comic we just read, since this is about comics, not novels. But anyways, I'm also going to give this a 4.5. I had no idea what this comic was about going into it. Jen, did you pick this comic?
No.
Was it you, Andy?
Yeah, this is my pick.
Okay, so, I had no idea what this was about. I had, I had a positive vibe going into it, though, because I really enjoyed the other stuff by Karen Gillan that I've read. You know, I forgot that he also wrote, like, Iron Man in 2013 and 2014, which was really good. Huh. But, yeah, so... I had no expectations other than that it was a writer that I was familiar with that I enjoyed, and I was really blown away by this comic. I've talked about this before, how much I like mythology, and how it's been really, like, pivotal in my reading life. And so whenever I see stuff like comics like this, I usually gravitate towards them, but this one, I just missed it. I had no idea what it was about. If I had known what the premise of this comic was, I would have been subscribing to it from day one. So this is definitely a 4.5. It didn't disappoint me, so yeah.
I don't know why I didn't give it a 5. But it's...
Yeah, you know...
I think because there's just... I don't know.
There's something...
There's some amount of the world that I want to know or wanted more of and didn't feel
I feel like I'm going to get that if I keep reading.
Yeah.
If I'm going to rate just this trade, I think a 4.5 is good. And 4.5 is great. I mean...
Jen?
So I feel like my rating...
2.
No. It does require, like, a little bit of explanation in that I have spent like the past 3 solid evenings late into the night writing about Sandman, and specifically how the use of mythology in Sandman affects reader perceptions of setting and character. So
thesis.
Yeah. God. Oh God. going into this, because of the last like 3 evenings I have spent going into this, made the content of this comic feel a lot less meaty, unfortunately. I really liked it, but at the same time, like, to me it started out like a little, like, I don't know, Snow Crash or something, like, you know, a fad where people are talking in tongues and, like, everyone's going crazy over it. And then it turned into this unresolved murder mystery that, well, it was unresolved. It didn't go anywhere. And the end was really gripping, but it was very, in terms of exposition, it kind of laid out who's who in a basic sense, but didn't go in depth into anything or even, like, what's happening. So I feel like all of these symbolic characters and points were used. Like, earlier I complained, like, what the hell is the 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah.
And then nothing was ever, we're not even given a teaser as to what those things are about. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, maybe this trade's gonna develop into a much longer story arc, and I don't know, maybe it will be like Saga, where you get more and more and more. But I just felt a little unfulfilled by these 5 issues. I did like it a lot, though, and I will continue reading it, so I'm going to give it a 3.5.
All right, that's legit. I feel you where you're coming from, like, with the lack of meatiness to the connection. And I get... That's there for me, too, but I just... I don't know.
Maybe I think if I hadn't been going in depth in that specific topic, I would have given it a 4.5. But just doing other work on it and, like, seeing other things so recently that were way more in-depth bumped it down a notch in comparison.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Neil Gaiman was going for there. And I think what they're going for here is... Not a statement, but it's a play on the insane idolization of pop stars, and it just
it's a different topic.
To a certain extent, it can't be meaty. These are pop stars. There has to be quite a bit of superficiality going on here. These aren't meaty, heady personalities, except for Baphomet, who is a serious intellectual capable of cultural illusions.
This is true.
I feel like that Neil Gaiman is using mythology. Like, mythology is the point, but in this comic, it's a means to an end.
Yeah, it's an aesthetic feature.
Yeah, so Jen, basically, that's why you're wrong.
Yeah, that's okay, though. I'm tired.
All right, you guys ready for Fight Night?
Fight Night, round one.
So this week we're doing best deity, or best comic about a deity. No, that doesn't even make sense. Best deity comic? I don't know.
Best use of a deity in comics?
That sounds like an Emmy Award, but a weird one. This year's Eisner, best use of a deity in comics.
Let me go. I can go first.
All right, David.
So I'm going to start my argument for Jonathan Hickman's God is Dead with two words. And those two words are Stoner Jesus. Because we all have this image of Jesus being a stoner. Because, you know, he looks like a stoner sometimes. And in God is Dead, he comes back. It's the second coming. And he is a stoner. It's amazing. But this comic is really good. First of all, it's got my boy Jonathan Hickman at the helm, at least initially. But the premise of the comic is that all of a sudden the gods reappear. And not just like one or two gods, but every pantheon appears at the same time. And they start to go to war over who gets to control the Earth. And the Earth gets fucked because all these gods are trying to kill each other, and they get their followers to fight the wars for them. And then Jesus comes back and he's a stoner. Scene.
Round two.
I'm going to go with Genesis by R. Crumb. Because you know what? If you're going to have to make a comic about a god, why don't you make a comic about the Lord? Capital L. God.
Big G?
Yeah, Big G. Not like this pantheon or that pantheon or any other of the little pantheons of people that don't exist anymore or haven't ever existed. The one that 80% to pull a number out of my ass probably of the world believe exists more than that. I'm sure more than that. Like, come on. It's God. It's Big God. G. Capital G. Capital L. The Lord. Genesis.
Round three.
Warren Ellis's Super God, because the effect was so strong that I vomited in my own mouth.
That was a pretty fucked up comic.
It's the most fucked up thing I've ever read. But it also touches on themes of what happens when godhood goes wrong.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was a really good comic. I
it
really
went from barf in the mouth to deep in like two sentences.
That's me.
Oh, man, I don't know. This is hard because I have great, like, memories of reading both Genesis and Super God. Jeez, Andy, I'm sorry. I never vote for you. But I'm going to go with Super God because I really, really like that comic. And, you know, Genesis just, it feels like a rehashing of another story I read sometime before. Or didn't actually read, but I heard about.
Yeah. Jen?
Andy, I'm sorry. I never vote for you.
It's all right. It's all right. I just hate you. Jen?
Genesis, I really, really love that. So that's personal bias.
Two weeks talking in a row, there. Jen voting for me. All right.
Unfortunately, I have not read God is Dead, but I do want to read about Stoner Jesus.
You have to get in. He's probably like 10 issues in, so you gotta. Mm.
There's some buy-in.
Yeah. Stoner Jesus does sound entertaining. Full truth, I have not read Genesis, even though it's on my shelf.
That's what?
My...
Come on, Andy.
So I don't mind losing because I'm gonna say Super God because it's the most fucked up comic I have ever read. And that's I feel like that's what deity comics should be. Just completely beyond your understanding of reality.
See, that's why I think you guys will like God is Dead, because it's definitely like that.
All right, so that's a point for Jen and only Jen.
Maybe, you know, I think maybe we should put God is Dead down for a later episode.
Sure. Maybe we should do a deity comic series, and I can
maybe
actually
for like
Genesis.
A... Never mind. I was going to say something that's probably offensive.
It's so hard to talk about deities and not get offensive. All right, let's get the scores.
David, 2. Jen, 2. Andy, 1.
All right, so that's it for this week. We've done our three picks for best trade paperback of 2014, Jen's, David's, and mine's. Next week, we're going to do the Matt Fraction Best of 2014 because every best of every year has a Matt Fraction comic in it. So this year is Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction. That's going to be next week. Until then, hey, if you want to support us, we don't have this in the intro yet, and I only mention it like every other episode. If you like listening to stories or books or anything like that, go to audibletrial.com/welcometocomics. You can get a free audio book when you sign up today, and it helps us out. So if you like listening to things and people talk, do that. audibletrial.com/welcometocomics. I gotta pimp that more. That's important to people, I think.
It's important to audible.com.
It's important to us.
That too.
Alright, that's it, everybody, for this week. Until next week, goodbye.
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 Actually, you know, I'm going to say it anyway because I feel like our listeners have a good grip on our... I was going to say maybe we could do God is Dead for an Easter special.
Do it.